ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
I think China is going to do what it always does. Look what they've done in electric vehicles. They've basically come to dominate the global electric vehicle industry and the vehicle industry in general.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
The National Labor Conference is about to get underway, with the gas export tax and gambling reform shaping up as key battlegrounds. But while there will be disagreements and policy fights, there's criticism that the event will be highly stage managed. Meanwhile, opposition leader Angus Taylor has unveiled a glossy new booklet, and you're about to see a whole lot more of it at press conferences. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Karvelas.
And I'm Melissa Clark.
And Mel, great to have you back on the pod. It's Federal Labor Conference time. It happens every 3 years. The parties rank and file and delegates and unionists and business figures and journalists and hang on.
Every man and his dog, it seems like. They've become quite the spectacle.
Yeah, and especially because these guys are in government. And when you're in government during a national conference, yeah, there's a whole lot of people that want to get in the ear and influence that party platform because you got real power. Now, Mel, a draft platform has done the rounds. What are the big fights about?
Look, there are a number of fights that'll be had, but I think there are a couple of key ones we can probably focus our attention on. Gambling is obviously a really big one because we know that despite what the government has done so far on gambling, that many in the party think that it doesn't go far enough. So there is a bit of a stoush developing over just what the policy platform will say. There's a big push more from the grassroots around trying to get a national regulator to oversee the industry, which was one of the recommendations of the report led by the late Peter Murphy as being a key element. And I think that's seen as one thing the government could do that doesn't necessarily cause political issues with the broadcasters or the sports leagues, but something that could make a substantial difference. So we'll see just how firm the language is around that. There is a bit of sensitivity of not wanting to make things awkward for the Prime Minister, but nonetheless trying to nudge the Prime Minister to do more. Another one that really jumps out is artificial intelligence, because this is something that is in flux right now in terms of what the federal government is doing in regulation of data center development in particular. Obviously, the unions want to make sure that there is more protections and more say for workers in how AI is rolled out in the workplace. So there's a lot of maneuvering around artificial intelligence in the national platform, and also the idea of having a gas tax, a greater tax on gas exports. There are a lot of parts of the Labor Party and the union movement that are behind a much broader community campaign to have a 25% gas tax. Now, this is, again, is going to come down to how they go with the language, PK. There's talk about the draft platform refers to getting a fairer return for natural resources. And if that's the kind of language, that might be something that the parliamentary party is quite happy to live with, because they can argue they're trying to get a fair return through initiatives they have made. But we've also hearing some interventions from key members of the party saying, look, there needs to be something more substantial to that, some kind of indication that in the future the party will try and put in a higher level of taxation on exports. So I think those three issues, PK, are probably the most in flux at the moment: gambling, artificial intelligence and gas tax.
I think that's bang on and accurate. If you look at, though, you're right, the language, the fair share, that is absolutely something that the Prime Minister and his cabinet can work around, right? You know?
Fair share can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Well, they're doing the gas reservation and, you know, that sort of changes the distribution of the gas, and that's more fair sharey fair sharey. Like, oh, I did that. There's ways of kind of trying to argue that they are already working towards some of that. Bill Shorten's intervention, I thought, is fascinating, though. Bill Shorten is fascinating for this reason. He was, of course, the former Labor leader and before the current Prime Minister. And his interventions, of course, matter because of that. He also, you know, carries some influence among, you know, in the right factions still, I think it's fair to say. It's actually his first conference that he's not going to, I think, though, but he's still had some strong views. He says there's a sort of national appetite for gas tax that needs to be looked at. Don't you think that was an interesting intervention?
I really did. And I think he carries a bit of weight in the party as being seen as the person who really pushed for reform around taxation and housing that obviously was not successful when he tried to lead the party to an election win with those policies, but nonetheless have now been addressed by the Albanese government. And I think that's given him a bit of a position to put himself as being ahead of the political debate, or at least seeing where the public is heading. And so by using his the carriage of that reputation, I guess, to then put his weight behind the idea of a fairer taxation process on gas exports is something that I think has weight beyond what perhaps any other former party leader might have in this space. I think he is trying to utilise his position a little bit there, not as a formal position holder, but as someone who carries the weight of having pushed for reform that has subsequently come through before.
Yeah, and I'm sure that Anthony Albanese loves that, doesn't he? He must love when Bill Shorten intervenes into a debate.
Internal Labor Party politics and love are often not words used in the same sentence, I think
no,
it's fair to
say. No, but they keep their show together well, don't they? I mean, yes.
They do. And I was thinking this before when you were mentioning it, PK, is that whilst, yes, there are fights, and the fact that Labor is in government means there's a lot of people wanting to come in and influence the government, it's also a bit of a handbrake on some of the debate because the Labor Party is very conscious that they're in a position of power, being in government at a federal level. And I think there is a real sense of needing to not do something that damages the government through this process. So in some ways, it's almost less robust because of the fact of being in government, even though it means there's more people trying to influence the Labor Party's position because of that.
And there's a more leeway given to Anthony Albanese and the sort of cabinet's attempt to manage some of the debates, more leeway because it carries consequence. I mean, the way that we report on it, the sort of messages it sends, if they're obsessed with boutique niche things that perhaps mainstream Australia isn't so ready for, think about political parties, right? Political parties have passions that are very much in the ideological fertile ground of parties often, that are not necessarily the passions of people who are apolitical or in the centre. And so they have to manage a bit of that too always. I mean, look at the Liberal Party's problems. It's been dogged by being too obsessed with its ideological pursuits. And so I think Labor is very aware of the optics around that. I want to say, though, just to cut a couple of other things, let's go to AI before we go to gambling. Like on AI, just watch this space, because I thought it was really interesting that we saw such a positive response from the trade union movement to the Prime Minister's AI speech. And it sort of begs the question, what kind of broader deals have been done with the trade union movement that may make them more open-minded about some more intervention from the Prime Minister, but it's still not quite as much as they'd like, especially when it comes to putting more requirements in the law around AI and jobs. So I just think that that's one space to watch, Mel. The unions don't often respond so positively unless they have stitched up some things that they consider sweeteners.
Well, it certainly is curious, given there was a lot of sentiment in the Prime Minister's speech, but not a lot of detail. So if the union movement was concerned about the lack of detail, they certainly haven't raised that in any way publicly. Do you think, though, maybe it's also a reflection of at the moment, it seems they're doing their best negotiating behind the scenes rather than in public. You know, different when the coalition was in power. They didn't really have a seat at the table when the coalition was in government, so they do a lot of their campaigning publicly. Whereas now they've got Labor in power, they seem to have worked quite successfully when it comes to changes made to industrial relations law in the first term. They didn't need a campaign publicly. They can campaign behind closed doors in private. I wonder if that's exactly what's going on here with AI as well, that they're able to make their case or raise their concerns in a way that doesn't have to be mediated through us in the media.
Mm, mediated through the mediators. Mm. Yeah, I think that's exactly what's happening. And I just think it's always telling to watch the response, to read between the lines of what might be going on. Look, the other things in relation to gambling reforms are worth mentioning. It's been kind of punted to a Senate inquiry, of course, in the sort of at the government level. But I think some of the pressure on the government on this, you saw it play out a bit at the New South Wales Labor Conference. I just think this is one of these bubbling issues. Who gets the most hurt over gambling addiction? It's working class Australia. That's meant to be Labor's base. And there are many who are worried about the kind of from pokies at a sort of state level to, yes, the gambling advertising, all of that, Mel, is a huge hot button issue in the Labor Party.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think where we're seeing a lot of this push for greater action on gambling is coming from those different levels of government. We've seen Darcy Byrne, the mayor of the Inner West Council in Sydney, Chris Minns is the New South Wales premier, be amongst those who are very clearly and publicly saying, look, what's being done federally is good, but there needs to be more and we need to keep working towards that. And I think that is because they will face elections and voters before the federal government will. You know, we'll have a New South Wales state election next year. So I think there's a reason we're seeing some of that come publicly is because the benefit there for the Labor Party at a New South Wales level in particular is one where there's benefit to showing the public that there is an intention to do more, even if exactly what that looks like isn't clear or isn't necessarily agreed on at this point.
So we'll see the shenanigans kick off tomorrow. I'll be at the Labor Party conference and we'll bring you all the newest, latest and see if there's things we've missed because in my experience...
There will be. Absolutely. Yeah. There'll be something that'll take us by surprise, without a doubt. That's the guarantee, the guaranteed surprise. You don't know what it is, but it's coming.
Yeah, and the Prime Minister will be making a significant announcement on Thursday. So tomorrow it'll be interesting to see where that goes. I want to go, though, now to Angus Taylor being forced to put out some internal spot fires this week. Oh, but wait, there's more. The opposition leader was rebuking One Nation Senator Malcolm Roberts for a series of conspiracy theories that he's been, you know, proliferating for a long time, to be honest. Meanwhile, South Australian Liberal Senator Alex Antic described Roberts as a clear thinker last week. Okay. A clear thinker. Then this week, Nine Papers reported that Antic was angling for a merger with One Nation in his home state of South Australia. Now, if you know anything about the South Australian Liberal Party, I know a bit. I can tell you that this is a party that has been, think about some of the people that have emerged from it, Amanda Vanstone, a sort of leading moderate, Christopher Pine, leading moderate at the moment, Anne Rustin, a moderate, Simon Birmingham. This is kind of, I'm just going to call it, historically at least, South Australia was full of kind of the sort of progressive liberals, if you like, and he wants them to get together with One Nation. Seems unusual, doesn't it, Mel?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it continues the arc that the South Australian Liberal Party has been on for a long time, which is that the conservative part of the party has been in an ascendancy. The individuals who are the leaders from the progressive side have gradually been leaving. Those that remain are people who are senior portfolio holders, you know, and Rustin is a good example of that currently. But at a branch level and an administrative level, the South Australian Liberal Party has been increasingly dominated by its conservative wing. And if we look at it at a state level, particularly after the most recent state election, election results. They're in a very parlous state. They're almost on an even sitting with One Nation in terms of representation at a state level. So it's almost as if we've got very different pictures. Yes, we've got senior, moderate, Liberal MPs at a federal level and some on the backbench. You know, Andrew McLaughlin's probably another really outspoken backbencher from the moderate side of the, or the smaller Liberal side of the Liberal Party. But in terms of factional power, the Conservatives have been in an ascendancy for a while. Alex Antic has been working to remake that division in his image for some time. Interestingly, he's not wanting to talk publicly about what his intentions may or may not be, but he's made it very clear that he personally is very chummy with One Nation. He is very public in his support for Corey Bernardi, former Liberal, now One Nation, something of a journeyman through politics, Corey Bernardi. But Alex Antic has made it very clear that he supports One Nation MPs like Corey Bernardi, certainly hasn't tried to water down suggestions of this. And this is a huge headache for Angus Taylor. He's trying to fight off One Nation. He's trying not to do anything to encourage its rise. And then he's got those who are playing key roles in the party in key states like South Australia talking about a merger with him. But it gets more complicated for Angus Taylor because not only does he need to try and knock over this idea that they're going to merge, and he was quite unequivocal in saying that. He's come out and said it will not be happening. I can assure you that is not what is happening. But he also needs to keep people like Alex Antic and those who want a closer relationship with One Nation on board because it's a key part of their base that they're losing to One Nation. So he's got to try and keep those people happy, but also knock off the ideas that they're putting forward if they're to have any hope of winning back some of the more moderate voters that have deserted the party in recent times. I mean, I wouldn't have Angus Taylor's job for quids. That's almost an impossible balance to try and manage, but that's where he's found himself.
Impossible is the right word. I mean, I literally, you know, sometimes you look at politics, Mel, and you think, ah, I know what I'd do. What are you doing here? Right? Like just that sort of, I actually don't on this. It is such a conundrum he faces, right? What do you do? Do you expel Antic? Well, that won't end well, will it? You know, what do you do?
Well, he'll just take a whole bunch of branch members with him and you've compounded the problem, right? But then yeah. You keep him in and it makes it all the harder to get new branch members to come to your all those inner city seats that you've just lost.
So it's a risk-reward proposition, like what helps you grow, and that's actually how you have to make the decision. But it's kind of a lose-lose in many ways regardless because you kind of create new problems. I mean, Alex Antic hosting controversial podcaster Sam Bamford later this month is a big issue too. Bamford is the podcaster that's caused a lot of headaches actually for Liberals recently, including Jacinta Price, but he's leading the campaign against Liberal MP Andrew Hastie. Some of his ideas are really, really, really out there on race. It's pretty full on. How does Taylor deal with all that stuff? I mean, that's just a headache waiting to happen, isn't it?
I think it's the headache that's already there. And the question is, does it turn into a migraine that can't be resolved?
Yeah. Look, one more thing that I think is worth mentioning. We talk about pamphlets at the start. Now, I just, full declaration, Mel's obsessed with political pamphlets.
I've just had some pamphlet PTSD flashbacks today, PK. Mm.
Tell me about this one and why this one matters.
Yeah, so Angus Taylor today has launched what's being called the Coalition's Plan. It's being called Fix the Economy, Protect Our Way of Life. It's literally a glossy booklet that Angus Taylor is holding up at his press conference today and that we can expect him to hold up at every press conference and every public thing he does over the coming weeks. And I think I just went into a bit of PTSD because it brought me back to the Abbott era. This was Tony Abbott as opposition leader had his Our Plan, Real Solutions for All Australians. Remember this, PK? Real Solutions. This was the booklet.
Not fake solutions. Thank goodness.
Real Solutions. And he had the booklet to show it. And every single time you saw him, I mean, our poor camera operators could barely get a shot of his face without the booklet covering at least a quarter of it because he was determined to hold up this booklet and show this is what we're about. We have a plan. Doesn't really matter if anyone reads it. It's this visual representation of we have a plan and we are ready to go. And I've found it so interesting that Angus Taylor is taking this approach to, you know, it's a pretty well-trodden path. I think Tony Abbott was the exemplar of it, but Scott Morrison had one too. He had his stronger economy, secure future plan that he would also hold up. Even Susan Lee, when she was developing the party's energy policy in her leadership time, had this affordable, reliable plan that she would wave around and hold up at every occasion. So there's sort of this long history of holding up glossy booklets to say, trust us, we have a plan, and here is a physical representation of it. So, look, it's really easy to mock, right? It's a glossy booklet. It often doesn't really have anything that we don't already know. You know, the plan that Angus Taylor's holding up, all of its internal contents are things that we already know that are already on the public record. So it doesn't have anything new. So it's quite frustrating to then have it waved around at every opportunity. But I think it is so interesting for a couple of reasons. I think it's an acknowledgement that their efforts to sell policies so far haven't worked. They haven't been able to cut through with it. And they do actually have policies to sell. You know, Angus Taylor has this tax back guarantee around trying to deal with the issue of bracket creep that is a serious economic issue. They have a well-developed plan to address it, whether you think it's the right one or the wrong one. They nonetheless have put a lot of work into it and have quite a good case to present for this reform, but no one knows anything about it. And he's struggling to get traction on it. So I find it interesting his turn to the Tony Abbott playbook with the booklet to try and remind people that there are policies there that they've developed, that they do have ideas that they're trying to put forward. And I think it's interesting that it's the Tony Abbott playbook, Tony Abbott now being the president of the Liberal Party, that is going back to those tactics that Tony Abbott really pioneered more than anyone else, I think, in terms of using a booklet to be a physical representation. Angus Taylor's now taking that approach to try and get a bit of attention back on the work that the party has done over the last few months.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it will really make much of a difference. Really? Do you think it'll make?
I think they're shooting for the old vomit principle, right? Say it so many times, show it so many times until people just go, oh, yeah, of course they've got a plan, and it becomes. I mean, we've seen Anthony Albanese do a similar thing with the Medicare card, right? Just wants to see you hold the Medicare card as a reminder, as a visual reminder every time. So, yeah, it could work. I don't know, but I think the fact that they're trying is an acknowledgement of what they have been doing to this point hasn't been working. So if they really got anything to lose by trying?
Yeah. What they've been trying isn't working because, you know, consistently doesn't matter what blunders that the One Nation Party seems to have, they're holding up in the polls. And that means that, you know, that vote, which is largely, not entirely, but largely a right-leaning vote, is splitting away from them, and the longer it goes on, I think the more entrenched it becomes. Like, they need to fight to get it back, and so he's trying to fight to get it back on the economics, but constantly he is being kind of distracted by the smaller issues. Earlier this week, we had the, you know, Tony Abbott's video attacking multiculturalism. Lots of significant figures in the Liberal Party saying they don't agree with that, but Tony Abbott is the Liberal Party president. Tony Abbott is the person who largely advises Angus Taylor. Like, all of this means it's very hard to get clear air to talk about your big economic plan, where, of course, the Liberal Party needs to be if it wants to be in the box seat to try and win elections again, not just keep losing them and losing them badly. But that's not happening. You know, like, they can't get on that message. So he can hold as many booklets as he wants, but unless everyone's prepared to actually stay on that script, Mel, I think it's going to be really hard to turn around the trajectory here.
It's funny you talk about staying on script, because I've had a bit of a flashback to the Tony Abbott plan, the real solutions plan. Do you remember what happened when there was a certain election campaign event and a local candidate was holding up the booklet and was asked what the 5 points of the plan were? Do you remember this, PK?
I remember that.
You remember this moment?
One of the most famous scenes of that campaign, yes.
It's The poor candidate couldn't name the 5 points of the 5-point plan, and it was a bit of a disaster and basically sunk his campaign in the moment. So there are risks that come with booklets, I think, is our takeaway message here. Opportunity, but risk that comes with a booklet.
That's right. Look, just before we go, I think some of the other things playing out today, there's more and more coming out about One Nation. Today, Pauline Hanson has labelled domestic violence a two-way street. She, of course, was instrumental in pushing the then, I think it was the Morrison government, to do a review, didn't they, in relation to domestic violence. We're seeing so much more scrutiny on things she's said, and they're very, very kind of problematic statements, I think, that have the real risk of alienating women voters. And women voters have been more open to Pauline Hanson, but all of this just adds to the pressure on her. And it's not a mistake that we're seeing more of these comments emerge. I think that the scrutiny by clearly the media, but also the main parties that are trudging and looking through all of this material, it's about trying to show voters the other parts of Pauline Hanson, not just the, you know, she's your wrecking ball. She's the person who can, you know, smash the big parties who you're disappointed in. She represents all these other ideas, which perhaps mainstream Australia doesn't support. Right, Mel?
Yeah, and this is where extended exposure to different elements of that, when there is questions of, that are seeking for more depth for some of these policies, that where in the past when you're an individual or a small number of party members who don't hold the balance of power, you're unlikely to be quizzed at any great detail about some of your policy positions if it's not going to be influential on the passage of legislation. Given their polling now, given the possibility of them holding a much more powerful position in the Senate or perhaps holding a bigger block of seats in the House of Representatives in the future if this polling were to eventuate on a voting day, that does mean more scrutiny. That does mean more questions applied to her and her required to offer some kind of answer for voters to assess. The broader those questions become, the more opportunity there is for voters to hear at least one thing they may not like about it. So there's certainly risk for Pauline Hanson and One Nation as this conversation unfolds over the coming months.
Well, that's it for Politics Now today. Mel, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, PK.
Tomorrow morning, Fran and I will be in the feed for a bonus Question Time edition, and then David Spears and I will bring you the latest from the Labor conference in the Politics Now feed. And if you have a question for us, please send a short voice note to the party room at abc.net.au. See you, Mel.
See you, PK.